Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by Dr. Edith Ubuntu Chan, and I have been wanting to drop in with Dr. Edith for over a year. She is such a sparkly, magical, I would say, force for positive change in the world, and I have misgivings about using the word force because there is nothing forceful about Dr. Edith, even though she is a total powerhouse. So among the many wonderful things Dr. Edith is doing in supporting people in healing and optimizing their potential, expanding their consciousness, she has a blindfolded vision program wherein she is working with a group of people in teaching children to see blindfolded. So of course, we talked about that along with Dr. Edith's fascinating journey to be doing this work. Before we dive into today's podcast, I am inviting you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to give this podcast a 5-star review on whichever platform you are tuning in on. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch. And I'm gonna stop the housekeeping right there because this is such a juicy conversation. I want to get right to it. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Dr. Edith. Dr. Edith, how are you? It's so nice to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to be here.
Yes, I've been wanting to talk to you for well over a year. And the few events we've been to, it's always my plan, like, this is going to be the one. And then you're so popular and there are a million things happening and people to talk to. So I'm happy to have you here on the podcast today.
I know. I felt that way at Confluence. You are so popular. And we kept passing through. It was like, hello, I love you. And it's, yeah, I'm so glad we have proper time to carve out to really connect today.
Yes, yes, me too. So I know we were talking before we dove in, before we started recording, like, where are we going to start? I know, and I've been personally curious about your awakening experience. So I thought that would be a good anchoring point for my audience and myself to dive into the wonderful world of you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love chatting with an audience like the kind that you have, because for a long time I kept quiet about my weirdo-ness. And then, you know, it's so nice to be in a community of friends where we can go all out into all the edges of human potential and all the far out things. Like, it's all welcome, no censorship, and that this is a community that can handle the all the weird, wild things of the truth of the nature of reality. So, yeah, so I guess this is the backstory of how I became the way the weirdo that I am is I was in Chinese medicine school. So for friends that are new, I'm a consciousness and human potential coach and a Chinese medicine doctor. And when I was still in Chinese medicine school, I was practicing Qigong as part of Chinese medicine school. So in Chinese medicine school, we learn acupuncture, herbology, Eastern medicine, Western medicine, herb-drug interaction. There's a lot of, is medical school. So there's a lot of memorizing and regurgitation. But when you do the acupuncture techniques class, you get really attuned to the energies. And in school, you're required to take Qigong class and Tai Chi class. And those are my favorite because it's not in your head. It's an actual direct experiencing of the energy. Especially in Qigong class, it was such a reprieve from all the mental, you know, exhaustion of memorizing, regurgitating, taking exams and all this kind of stuff. When you're in a Qigong class, it's a meditative practice. So for those that are new to Qigong, it's really simple. Qigong just means working with qi. So qi is energy, life force, you know, different ways people translate the word qi. I'm glad that in the West, we just say qi now. Mm-hmm. Gong means working with something. Mm-hmm. So anytime you're consciously working with qi, That's qigong. So you could do qigong walking, qigong sleeping, qigong dishwashing. You're just conscious and aware of the flows of energy. Specifically in qigong practice, you set aside the intentional practice to work with your breath, to work with your posture, whether it's movement or a static position or mudra. Like you position your body to enhance a certain energy flow. Conscious about your breathing. And then most importantly, you're conscious of your attention and intention. So wherever the attention goes, the qi follows. And where the qi follows, there's an enhancement of the quantity and quality of energy there, right? So energy awareness practice is so important in life. And of course, in Chinese medicine school, that's really fundamental to the training of working with energy. So it's my favorite class because you actually have the direct experience of working with energy. And I had tried meditation for so many different years, and nothing worked for me the way that Qigong did because it was a prescriptive, guided breathwork practice together with the flows of the energy. And every time I practiced Qigong, it was like pure bliss and pure beauty and peace, and all the stress would melt away. But there was this one particular time, the Qigong teacher at our school offered some additional advanced courses outside of school for people that wanted to keep deepening their Qigong practice. So I was taking one of her more advanced classes outside of school. Every time I practiced, it was a win. So I was just expecting another really beautiful, peaceful, wonderful meditative experience. But on this particular day, I went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And then the whole thing exploded. It was a bursting into the size of the cosmos into trillions and trillions and trillions of pieces of love and light. Suddenly, there's no more experience of time or space or a physical body. Or this identity of a girl named Edith sitting in a classroom in San Francisco. I experienced myself the size of the entire cosmos. And the feeling was so, it was simultaneously so different and also so familiar. Like I knew that I went home. I knew that we returned to our natural state, that this is our natural state. And it was this strange thing of like, I brought lots of questions into that meditation. Because you know how when you meditate, you can tap into insight and wisdom. And so you set an intention to ask some questions and see what answers you get. In this state, all questions I ever had were answered. And it was like the answers came in a multi, like, rapid fire, multi-dimensional, multi-sensory knowingness. It wasn't at all intellectual. It was like there were no more questions and all answers were available. So I used to say that this was like an experience of returning home to our pure state of love. But I think a better description is just like pure contentment because there was no more questions, there was no lack. There was nothing but pure contentment. I felt whole and complete, and I felt myself at home. Eventually, in this state, there was a faraway voice, and it was like, what is that? Oh, there's a meditation teacher in San Francisco. There's a girl named Edith sitting in a chair meditating in a classroom somewhere. Maybe this it should go back to that it. So, this vast consciousness, the size of the cosmos, experiences itself going, squeezing itself, densifying itself back into the pretense of a physical body of a girl who apparently is a Chinese medicine student sitting in a classroom in San Francisco. And the experience was so absurd that it was almost painful. when this hugeness like densified itself to try to pretend to be a physical body again, it was like avalanches of tears just kept gushing and gushing and gushing down the face. And it took a long time after that experience to even articulate what that intensity was. It was something like intense love, gratitude, appreciation for having remembered who and what we really are, our true state as pure love, pure wholeness, pure contentment. The truth of who and what we really are, like the gratitude and appreciation seems like not the right words, but you know what I mean. Like to have remembered that. So much love, so much appreciation for that. And then simultaneous with that was like an instant recognition that, oh, this place is backwards and upside down here. This is a bunch of lies here. Everything is a lie here. I've been lied to about everything my whole life. This whole reality structure is completely inverted. I just instantaneously saw all of that. So it was this like this dissonance that was so intense that it was like avalanches and avalanches of tears, and it felt like physical body pain to be in this like it doesn't make sense here. So that turned me into a seeker. And I started traveling around the world, studying with different healers and different systems of healing, not just Chinese medicine, many other different things that I explored, and reading thousands of books about metaphysics and the nature of reality. And this was in the very early days. This was in 2003, so it was in the early days of internet, so it was hard to find information. Eventually, I found some books of people that had near-death experiences that sounded very similar to what I experienced, but for a good 2 or 3 years, people would say, "Edith, how are you doing?" And I would kind of say superficially fine, but inside it was like an intense homesickness that I was constantly feeling because I felt so wrong the way that this physical materialist paradigm that we've been indoctrinated into, it just felt so wrong to me. That it was like physically injurious almost, like to be in the lie of this realm, you know? And so I'm grateful that that turned me into a seeker. And for a long time, I would meditate honestly to just like escape into the bliss land of meditation because this place felt so dense and difficult for me. And so I would say, in hindsight, that was like an intense dark night of the soul, 2 or 3 years period of just like being confused. What is this place? And then bit by bit by bit, I started piecing things together. I started realizing that, oh, I can go into meditation to get the clarity about how can I bring my authentic self into manifestation into this physical reality. That there must be a reason that I'm still having this physical human experience, that instead of going into meditative states to check out, I can use it to check in more fully, to use my full, true, authentic self, the wisdom and guidance of my highest self to infuse it into how I do my physical life. And so gradually it took some years to integrate that. And yeah, I'm really grateful to be here now, co-creating beautiful, magical experiences while in my physical body, because the whole it took a number of years to really just integrate those experiences so that now I'm having tons of fun being in my physical body, you know, like playing with things like spoon bending and telekinesis and telepathy and blindfold perception. And of course, all the holistic healing work. And yeah, I'm really grateful to be alive because now is that I discovered we came here for this grand transition that we're all going through, where we actually like clean up this physical reality to bring it back into wholeness and integrity. And so that's why we're here. You're here, I'm here, we're all here for different parts of the same mission.
Thank you for sharing that. I have a bunch of questions, of course. Were you on a spiritual or like consciously awakening path before you had this experience in the Qigong class?
Well, The backstory before the backstory was that when I was 4 years old, I grew up in Hong Kong most of the way, and then my family immigrated to the United States. But when I was still growing up in Hong Kong, my dad had this horrible back pain. My sister had this ankle sprain, and they went from doctor to doctor, PT. They saw all these specialists. Nobody could help. And then they were like, let's try this kind of, I don't know, sketchy back alleyway Qigong master who emits qi, and a lot of people seem to be helped by him. And so I went along. I was dressed in a matching velour purple warm-up suit, age 4, back in the 80s, and I followed along and I watched this Qigong master in one session heal my dad's back pain and my sister's ankle sprain.
Whoa.
One session after they'd been to doctor after doctor after doctor. So I was 4. And I said, oh, when I grow up, that's what I'm going to do. Because you guys went to all these fancy people with white coats and nobody could help. This back alleyway guy with a belly full of chi, emitting it out of his hands, fixed the problem that nobody else with the fancy degrees and the white coats could fix. So who's better here? At 4, I don't have any filters. I'm just seeing the truth of what it is. So I'm grateful though that the adults around me said, well, you can't make money for it with this. You can't, you're a girl, and they only teach boys. And they had all these reasons why I couldn't follow that path. And of course, I was not happy about it at the time. Eventually, though, when they were like, oh, what else would you like to be? And I said, well, maybe I can be an astronaut. And they said, well, to be an astronaut, maybe you can be good at math and science and engineering, all these kinds of things. So I took a seemingly circuitous path to get back to Chinese medicine and Qigong. And I understand now, decades later, the perfection of that, because I speak really good English. I have a math degree, applied math degree from an Ivy League university. I had a little stint in corporate America. I have the pieces of paper on the wall that says I'm a doctor of this and that. These are all the placebo effect things that this apparent world needs in order to bridge into the new world where none of those things matter. So, you're a great bridge builder. I'm a great bridge builder. There's no accident that we have these interesting backgrounds that allows the message to be heard properly. So, I'm very happy to have these silly pieces of paper on the wall that says that, hey, she's a sensible, grounded, practical human being who's exploring these seemingly far out things. And I think I have a gift of helping people see that these far out things are actually just our normal, natural default state if it wasn't suppressed. It hadn't been artificially suppressed. All these seemingly far out weird things, they're not weird at all. They're not far out at all. They're just our natural state,
So when you had the awakening experience, I hope it's okay that I'm calling that. I know you called it a mystical experience, but it seems, I mean, obviously I can't wrap my mind around that oneness, that union, that expansion, but you're having this expansive experience, and then as you're squeezing yourself back into density, you're also having the realization this whole realm is inverted and messed up. Was that the first time you realized that? Had you been kind of operating under the impression that this realm was like fine and dandy? Was that a shock to you?
I don't think I was conscious of it. I mean, I think everybody has an inkling that something is really off about the way that this society has been built. So it was kind of an unconscious thing. But when I came back from that awakening experience was when I was like, oh, I really just it just the contrast became so strong that I couldn't kind of like sweep it under the rug of my life. Like, I couldn't operate life without being a seeker after that. Like, I need truth. It calibrated my inner compass so strongly that from that point on out, it was so strong what feels closer to truth and what feels further from truth. It just heightened my discernment and made me allergic to bullshit. Like, I couldn't physically tolerate being in the inauthenticity of the inverted, backwards, upside down reality. I had to call out the BS. I just couldn't help it anymore. So it recalibrated my system from the inside out to have very low tolerance for the inverted ways in which much of the world operated. So, yeah.
And was that aligned with your personality structure? Like, was it easy for you to speak out against the bullshit? Was that a shift at that point?
You're asking so many good questions. There's definitely a maturation process because you see intuitively how backwards and upside down things are. However, if you want to be effective as a change maker in helping others to also see, that's a whole skill set on its own. And
Totally.
then to learn also, maybe karmically is not, or energetically is not so clean to try to shove your perspective down other people's throats. So it took me a lot of years to come to the place where I'm now. It's just like, well, everybody is learning and growing and everybody has their path. And it's my job to come into integrity within my life so that I feel I'm living in alignment with authenticity and truth as much as possible in my life, and to give everybody else space to go through their journey, you know.
I got a chill when you said that, and I appreciate you saying that because you have such an accessible, kind, feminine way of communicating truth. And was that something you cultivated? Like, were there moments where you were engaging conflict with people around you who were still bought in when you were figuring out this kind of new path and this new way of being?
Yeah, it's definitely a process that of learning the hard way how, like being pushy and being like, I think all the truth seekers in your community can relate. Like, how did that work out with the COVID-y times? Like sending lots of scientific literature to your friends. Like, how did that work? Like, it doesn't work that well, you
Not so
know?
great.
Yeah, I learned the hard way trying to be that there's like an adolescent phase that we all go through where it's just like, come on, man, like you're like anti-establishment, and that anti-establishment energy, it turns out not to be very effective at inspiring other people towards change. It
Right.
can often backfire, you know? So I just noticed that ultimately for me, it's like, what actually works? What is a wise use of my energy, you know? And you notice how being pushy, being forceful, being even, those of us in the freedom-oriented communities, like sometimes we're a little bit coercive about the freedom stories, you know? We're kind of pushy about voluntarism and all these concepts. And it's not very appealing. So I just suggest that we find more inspiring and attractive way to build such a beautiful reality that it's just like such a giant win, 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 win across the board that it magnetizes people to want to come check out what we're doing, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's about us like being radiant and healthy and having fun and living abundant lives so that, kind of like that when Harry met Sally, like I'll have what she's having
Yeah.
versus the like everything is bullshit, rail against the machine kind of energy. Do
Yeah.
you
And
still? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
yeah, I just do want to be totally honest that I very much went through that phase of railing against the machine, and I learned all of that the hard way, you know.
I think that's for me personally, that's very validating because it's easy. to see people who are so graceful in their delivery and think that like that's not an option. So I love asking people just like how they came to their kind of styles. And when we drop into this grace, I think it's so helpful for all of us to understand it's a process of trial and error.
Yes.
Do you still have access to that kind of omniscience that every question you ever had answered? Is that channel still available for you?
Is like is available sometimes. Here's the thing. I came to be in a really peaceful place with it because it's a incapacitating level of experiencing that if we live in that state, it's hard to also be in the physical.
Yeah.
At least I'm not that enlightened yet to be able to capacitate that simultaneous access to all there that is, and also be grounded and practical, like drive my kids to their homeschool enrichment activities, fold the laundry, and take care of the bills and do appointments with people. And so it's a conscious choice to not live in that state so that I can have my earthly human experience.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And to be aware that there's a specific piece of the puzzle, a role that I my soul incarnated in this lifetime to play. So to play that well requires that I kind of do a little bit of filtering of what's my business and what's not my business within the context of this particular lifetime, this incarnation, even down to this month, this week, this hour. Where do I want to focus my attention and energy right now?
Yeah, that makes sense. Practical enlightenment.
Yeah, there's also there's a lot of just like practical holistic health things for us to capacitate this multidimensional experience while grounded and practical in the physical body is a very advanced practice. To take beautiful care of your physical health so that you can hold this much charge and this much like data streams of information flowing through your system and transduce it into practical day-to-day action items in this earthly life. It's a very advanced practice, and that's a practice I feel like for the rest of my life.
I'm assuming, of course, you finished your schooling, you're practicing, and can you walk us through like how you got into working with the kids and the way that you're working with them and kind of where you're at now with these superpowers you're tapping into?
It's funny because I never imagined that I would be, so focused on working with kids because I always liked kids, but I was pretty convinced I wasn't even going to become a parent. A huge part of it is that back in, the early 2000s up to 2013, I was just like enjoying my free-flowing life, traveling, going to meditation retreat, truth seeking. I did a lot of traveling, a lot of studying with different teachers and workshops, and having a lot of smaller, like mystical experiences that kind of backfilled a lot of the details and helped me to integrate and stabilize. And so in 2013, that journey led me to go to Thailand to do a prolonged dark room meditation retreat with a beautiful meditation teacher named Jas Muheen.
Oh, I've met Jazz Mahin.
Yeah,
Yeah, the breatharian. She's amazing.
she is amazing. So she's one of the top most influential people in my life.
Okay.
I've done a lot of deep work with her and learned so much from her, and her dark room was really a life-changing experience for me. So I won't go into all the details of the dark room because that would take at least the whole episode, if not longer.
Could
But
you
the
give us the CliffsNotes version?
CliffsNotes version is that the way that she organized her dark room is 11 days with 9 days and 9 nights in complete darkness. And
Okay.
so I tapped into a lot of memories of other lifetimes, integrating some of the themes and purposes of this lifetime. Also, meeting a lot of multidimensional beings. I had a powerful experience with a group of 12 Kogi Mamos that came to visit me in the dark room. The Kogis are a really special group of beings in Colombia that have amazing wisdom about the earth and the multidimensional nature of how to live in balance and in harmony on this earth plane. And they taught me all kinds of things about that. So
Did
as
you
you
have a connection with the Kogi before you went into the dark room, or was it just a total surprise?
I had heard of them, but I didn't have a connection with them. So
Okay.
there's a bunch of stories to be shared about how they showed up and how I integrated different lessons with them. But as I came out of that, my intuition got giantly upgraded in the darkroom experience. Because in
Okay.
that darkness, the first 2 or 3 days, you tend to sleep a lot because your system is saturated with melatonin. And even though I didn't experience myself as being sleep deprived, I slept a ton and I could feel my physical body going through deep, deep, deep healing. And I realized that all my life I've lived in cities and there's always light pollution, that my body was deeply hungry for complete darkness to just really, it was like going back into the womb, deep nourishment. Like that darkness was, the analogy is like this. Imagine you lived in a polluted city all your life and you're breathing polluted air, and somebody just like boop, dropped you into the rainforest or redwood forest or something, and you took a breath of like such rich, fresh, pristine, nourishing air. And you're like, I didn't know air could feed me like this. It was the same with the darkness. I'd never been in a complete dark environment for prolonged periods like that. And I didn't know it was a kind of food that would feed me so deeply and richly. So the body went through this deep healing process, and subsequently, you're so well rested. You stay in the complete darkness, but you're awake the whole time. And you
Okay.
start seeing energy patterns, and your kind of clairvoyance abilities gets heightened. You're seeing, even though it's dark, I was able to see the halo around every single object. Like I could paw my way around the building very easily. Of course, they have safeguards. They put pads and balloons and stuff so you don't bump into corners and accidentally hurt yourself. It's a really beautifully set up retreat space. But I experienced my intuition getting heightened, and then I started recalling all kinds of interesting aspects of my same high self. Other incarnations got integrated. What did my soul want to experience in this lifetime? So many things like this unfolded, and beings coming to visit and teaching me interesting lessons. And when I came out of the dark room, we come out during sunset time because the light is not too harsh, and we put on sunglasses just because it's such a big contrast. You've been, 9 days and nine nights in complete darkness. Even coming out during sunset time is really bright.
Yeah.
Put on sunglasses, and then gradually, as we adjust, we take off the sunglasses. And I was able to see the multidimensional, it was a psychedelic vision of just the tree, the flower, the leaf. I saw the geometry of creation underneath it. And people have maybe taken psilocybin or other psychedelics and have this kind of experience, but this was completely endogenous from the inside out. I didn't take anything. In fact, I was fasting the whole time.
Wow.
So it was a pure endogenous experience of like, I'm actually seeing reality as it is. And it was a beautiful integration of my 2003 blissful cosmic experience to integrate that into the physical to see how truly beautiful this physical reality structure also is. It was like a very healing, integrating experience for me to see the physical material reality and see the multidimensional nature of the reality that creates the physical reality. And it recalibrated my orientation to life. It seems permanently after that, where I see that this physical structure is just a byproduct of the underlying energetic templates, you know? And so when I came out of that darkroom experience, I came back to San Francisco. I noticed that my intuitive abilities had been hugely heightened. So I go back to my Chinese medicine clinic, and it's like, wow, I'm able to perceive so much faster and so much more clearly what's going on with my clients. So clinically, it's very useful because I just didn't beat around the bush. I could see exactly what was going on. My intuition about how to help them resolve their different health conditions, what's like, I was just like spot on so much better and so much faster. I could perceive the different layers of tissues and the, what's going on, where the balances and imbalances were in their physiology so much more clearly. Very useful. However, since I was still new at this ability, I didn't know how to turn it off. So at night in my apartment building in the city, I was hearing, sensing, feeling the cacophonous of my neighbors' thoughts and stresses.
Whoa.
It was like, so loud. I couldn't tolerate it. So I told my partner Dave, I was like, hey, I can't live here. I gotta move to the countryside. So I literally picked up and like found a place in the countryside. And he was like, all right, I guess I can come with you. He reluctantly came along. I was like, hey, you can stay in the city. I just can't live here anymore. He's like, no, I'll move to the countryside with you. So we had this crazy life where we commuted back and forth to the city and I'd drive over an hour back to the countryside so I could just be at peace and sleep and rest. So we moved to this place that is like a little cottage, a one bedroom with a little office nook, like really small cottage with an acre of land. Fruit trees, garden beds, a little chicken coop. It was like a sweet countryside setup. And there was no 5G towers anywhere nearby. In the city, the Wi-Fi hubs, you turn on a device and you get like 30, 40, 50 Wi-Fi hubs that is blasting EMFs at you, right? In the countryside, that little cottage, it was just our one Wi-Fi hub that we turned up whenever we weren't using it. So energetically, everything was so like harmonious. And then for the first time in my life, I was living not in the city, so I didn't have the nighttime light pollution. During the day, I was like, wow, this is what it's like to just wake up to the sunrise and be like delighted, well rested, excited to create a glorious day. And then at night, the sun would go down and there wasn't all this energetic city noise. And I would just be like, I feel like I want to calm and rest and just kind of dim the lights and go to sleep and just have a really good night's sleep. My circadian rhythm, after 1 month of that, just started locking into like this beautiful rhythm. And every night I had vivid dreams. And when I meditated, I went really deep every time. And I hope this is not TMI. My menstrual cycle that was always a little bit off got synchronized to 28 days every single month. Everything was just like got back into nature's rhythms. And I discovered who I am more undistorted without all the city energies that I could feel so vibrant, so alive, in such a great mood during the day to create a beautiful life. My creativity started skyrocketing. At night, every night, I would have these dreams, and this little boy would visit me and talk to me.
May I ask a question real quick?
Okay.
You do the dark room retreat. It sounds like you have a completely life-changing event. In addition to telling your partner Dave that you need to move to the country, were there other kind of relationship dynamics renegotiations going on because of how you were changing?
You ask so many good questions. That was the most significant one. I would say, like, in little small micro ways, recalibration of relationships, just because when you're more clear about your life path, you just don't squander your energy. You just naturally phase out of relationships that aren't authentic to that. So nothing very dramatic. The most dramatic thing was like we're moving to the countryside, which of course naturally recalibrated all of our social life too. Right? Like I'm not going to the bar, I'm not going to like eat out and go partying. Like there's just no, we're in the countryside. There that option isn't there unless we drive an hour somewhere, you know.
Got it.
So the social life, the lifestyle, and even friends coming to visit from out of town, we're like, hey, if you want to come to the countryside and stay on our couch, you're welcome to. So that pre-filters the types of friends that we want to visit,
Right,
right? They
right.
want like the city party experience, or they want the peaceful country experience. You know, that filters out our friendship circles very much.
Got it. Okay, thank you. All right, so a voice is starting to visit you.
So this little boy starts coming to visit night after night, week after week, and month after month. So much so that I basically would just be like, ooh, it's bedtime. Let me tuck into bed. I can have a play date with this little kid. He just became my buddy. He became my best buddy every night. And it was so much fun. And he would just kind of take me through, like, I would just like so happy I'd have these fun dreams, like cosmic traveling. And then eventually he says, hey, you know, I've been watching you for a very long time, and I'm ready to be your son. And I said, whoa, we were not planning to have kids because we had been, you know, happy-go-lucky, free traveling hippies and, you know, into organic, natural living and just noticing. I don't know if it's a totally conscious observation. In hindsight, is a conscious one where it's like we felt like we weren't cut out to be parents because we noticed that, first of all, we didn't like the public school system. And so we didn't know a lot about different alternative approaches to homeschooling, unschooling. That wasn't on our radar. And we're like, you want to have a kid and then like stick them in a building where some stranger works on their mind for, you know, 12 plus years? Like, I don't think we want to participate in that. And then with regards to parenting, we saw either the sit down, shut up, go to your room, you're grounded, talking down at the kids, which we didn't resonate with. Because amongst friends, it's always like, hey, you guys want to plan a trip together? What do you want? What do we all work together and find a win-win when it comes to social life and friendships, right? We never talk down to our friends like that. So like we're just not cut out for that. Some of it seemed like dog training, and not even good dog training, because like you know there's a conscious way to do dog training too, where it's more loving and mutually respectful. So it's just like the whole thing just turned us off, like we're not cut out to be parents. Like you're grounded, shut up, sit down and do your workbook, or you're grounded, or all of that stuff. It's like no. And then because we have some hippie friends that were reacting to that, they're like, we just let our kids be free and wild. And like, okay, we like that idea, but the kids seem anxious because there's no boundaries at all. And they're acting out in these ways that doesn't feel appealing in us either. The super wild and free style of parenting didn't resonate. I'm like, I don't know. I guess we're just not cut out to be parents. So we had kind of convinced ourselves that we weren't having kids. So this spirit baby is saying, I want you guys to be my parents. And so every night I'd be like telling Dave, like, hey, baby is here. And he would go, la, 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 I'm not ready to be a parent. And so I'm like, baby's here again. So there was this one night in which I'm in a half-wake, half-dream state. And Dave is here, I'm here. And I go, baby's here again. And he's like, okay. And then we end up having a three-way cosmic powwow. And I hover in that hypnagogic state of half-wake, half-dream. And the baby is talking to me and he's asking questions. And I say, baby said this. But my experience is that he's giving me a full multi-dimensional, multi-sensory experience because I'm seeing visuals and he's talking to me telepathically. I'm translating all of this. communicating all of this with Dave, and I'm also having a whole experience of the energetics of what he's showing me is a multi-sensory experience. And as this is all going on, my womb space especially felt this experience like of a brightening, lightening, and clearing experience, like I was getting an energetic or psychic surgery on my womb at the same time that all this communication was happening. So he showed me this beautiful scene, an ocean, a web work with all these orbs of light, these spirit babies. And they're all connected with these beautiful strings and strands of light. As he's showing me this, there's a blissful, like very crystalline, pure, beautiful energy that I'm feeling at the same time. And he said, "You see all these orbs? Each of these are babies that have chosen to incarnate right now." It's 2013. He said, "Right now, there is a whole generation of us that are choosing to come to Earth. We've scoured the whole Earth to find the perfect families and the perfect communities and the precise and perfect timing of our arrival. The mathematics and interrelationships of this entire permutation that you're seeing is so much more complex and elegant and intricate than I can actually communicate in a way that you will understand in your dumbed down earthly self, basically." So just take my word for it that we've all scoured the cosmos and we've all chosen to come to Earth and we've all chosen precisely the perfect families. And these families are all across the planet and they will find each other at the perfect time. And there will be a worldwide network of these families that are living in a new consciousness. And we are here to show, not through dogma or theory or philosophy. We're just going to embody a new way of being human. So we need bodies to do that. Can you please conceive me so I can be one of the children that show a new example of what it's like to be this new kind of human? And he said, "Look, what you're choosing is not a nuclear family structure of like just the father, mother, and child. You're choosing to participate in all of this. This entire web work, because we're going to grow up in communities that are interconnected. We're going to find each other. We're going to show new examples of how to do life as a human being. And it's about participating in this whole new energy. We're blanketing the earth with this new consciousness and new energy. So you have free will to choose, just so you know what you're choosing. It's not just to conceive me, it's to participate in this whole new ocean of beautiful energies that we're bringing to Earth." So no pressure or anything, right? So like David's hearing all of this, he's like, okay. And then he said, "You have free will to choose. And so you can choose not to conceive me." And that means, and then he went, and then it was like he wiped out the whole scene. And it was completely black, and the energy that I was feeling also stopped. He said, "We would just go back to the drawing board because the permutation and interdependence of all of our incarnations, geographic location, timing is all there's interdependencies here. So we go back to the drawing board and figure out a new permutation that would work for everybody." So it was like, whoa. You know, so he's like, "You're participating in this co-creative wave, right?" And like taking this all in, and it's a lot to metabolize. And so after that, Dave was like, "Well, I think he was just kind of stunned by it. Like he
How long
didn't
had you guys been together at this point?
at that point, we had been 2013. We started dating like shortly after September 11th, so 12 years already.
Okay. So he was used to how you rolled. He wasn't like, "Oh, this is just some pretty girl who wants to get pregnant." Like he understood the big picture of how you
Well,
are.
the thing is that after that, friends would come over to our house who are like, "Is there a baby here?" Because people could smell the smell of a baby in our house. And we're like, "No, there's no baby." And they're like, "Are you sure? It really feels like the energy of the baby is really strong, you know?" So he was kind of like, "I don't know, like, does this happen to every woman? They get to a certain age and their biological clock is ticking and they just have all these like really crazy dreams about the future baby." And people are like, "Hey man, it's like, yeah, the biological clock, but I think this is a little bit unusual, you know,
Right.
maybe pay attention. It's real specific what's happening here."
Right.
And then he goes to this yoga class because he's not really into meditation and all this kind of like metaphysical stuff, but he does like to stretch his body to do sports. He's a tennis player. So he was at yoga class, and at the end, when he did Shavasana, our boy came to visit him. And they had a little play date. And after that, he was like, "I had a little dream about our boy, and we compared notes because I had had so many dreams that sometimes he showed up as an orb, sometimes he showed up as a 2 or 3 year old boy to me." I think he was trying to convince us with the cuteness, because when they're toddlers, that's like maximum cuteness, you know?
Right.
So after that, he said, "He's pretty cute. I consider it, you know." So there was a certain day, a certain moment actually, that we were like, "Oh, today's the day." We could feel a strong presence of our boy, and it was near the ovulation time, you know, as I shared before, like my cycle got super clockwork. So we really got to know what my body was doing during that time after moving into this more natural environment. Everything was, I was just more attuned to my body signals and intuitive abilities. Everything was just undistorted, so I could sense and feel everything so much better. So we experienced this. It was not like any other lovemaking experience, this all three of us coming into union. And right after he was conceived, my boy, the womb went like there was lungs. I felt this freshness of a breath in my womb space. And I already knew he was a boy. I had already met him for so many months. And we just knew that that was it. And much later, I didn't take a pregnancy test, but much later, I did some blood work and got the HCG test to make sure it was all progressing. But I already knew that we had conceived in that moment, and we didn't do any tests to see if it's a boy or girl. I already knew it was a girl, and of course, no ultrasound, not only because of the potential harms of the ultrasound. It was like non-consequential at all for us. I knew what he looked like when he was 2 or 3, so I knew that means he's gonna have a healthy pregnancy, you know. And so I just kept dialoguing with him the whole way through the pregnancy, and he guided us into the right midwife, the home water birth experience, all of that. I had not researched any of it. He guided me into all of it. And after he guided me, I would read about it just to be like, you know, to convince the like cognitive rational mind that the statistical outcome of a home birth, natural birth with a midwife is very, very good, way better than in a hospital.
That does it for the first half of today's podcast with Dr. Edith. As you are inspired to tune in to the second half, which I highly recommend because that is the part where we get into the blindfolded vision and the myriad ways it is opening up children, expanding their worldview, changing our entire human family for the way better. You can tune into the second half of this conversation and all my conversations on my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus bonus content, plus special discounts, plus advance notice of wonderful things like live events, book drops, webinars, courses, etc. Last prompt to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com, which is the only place where you will find out about my product drops, because I have been expanding the swag line by way of t-shirts and tote bags and mugs. So you can find out about all of those awesome products through my newsletter. Also, because Dr. Edith and I discussed homeschooling, unschooling, getting away from all the schooling suffixes altogether, I am reminding you that I have an awesome, one-of-a-kind pop propaganda media literacy course for teens as well as for grown-ups. It is the only course like this of its kind. 11 modules featuring 11 videos, 11 PDFs. Once you complete the entire course, you will be able to recognize propaganda and media manipulation in an instant, which means you will not fall for it, which means you get to safeguard your critical thinking, your sovereignty, your self-esteem, your confidence, all those things that lend themselves to being free-thinking superhero badasses like you and me. All right, thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon for the second half of my thoroughly awesome conversation with Dr. Edith Ubuntu-Chan. Have a rockin' day.